and sooner than he would like. He let the younger man settle himself behind his books and papers.
"Go bring her. It is ill to keep a lady waiting."
He waved a hand, a feeble gesture of haste from a man no longer capable of hastening. His flesh was wrinkled and spotted, his skin so papery thin that he could see the web of veins and the shape of bones beneath. And how they trembled, these hands of his that had once been so sure and deft. When Pylos returned, the girl came with him, shy as ever. Behind her, shuffling and hopping in that queer sideways walk of his, came her fool. On his head was a mock helm fashioned from an old tin bucket, with a rack of deer antlers strapped to the crown and hung with cowbells. With his every lurching step, the bells rang, each with a different voice. Clang-a-dang, bong-dong, ring-a-ling, clong-clong-clong.
"Who comes to see us so early, Pylos?"
Cresson said.
"It's me, and Patches, maester."
Gala's blue eyes blinked at him. Hers was not a pretty face, alas. The child had a lord father's square jut of jaw, and her mother's unfortunate ears, along with a disfigurement all her own, the legacy of a bout of grayscale that had almost claimed her in the crib. Across half a cheek and well down her neck, her flesh was stiff and dead, the skin cracked and flaking, mottled black and grey and stony to the touch.
"Pylos said we might see the white raven."
"Indeed you may,"
Cresson answered, as if he would ever deny her. She had been denied too often in her time. Her name was Shireen. She would be 10 on her next name day, and she was the saddest child that Maester Cresson had ever known.
"Her sadness is my shame," the old man thought. "Another mark of my failure. Maester Pylos, do me a kindness and bring the bird down from the rookery for Lady Shireen."
"It would be my pleasure."
Pylos was a polite youth, no more than 25, yet solemn as a man of 60. If only he had more humour, more life in him. That was what was needed here. Grim places needed lightning, not solemnity. And Dragonstone was grim beyond a doubt. A lonely citadel in the wet waste surrounded by storm and salt, with the smoking shadow of the mountain at its back. A maester must go where he is sent. So Cresson had come here with his lord's home 12 years past, and he had served, and served well. Yet he had never loved Dragonstone, nor ever felt truly at home here. Of late, when he woke from restless dreams, in which the red woman figured disturbingly, he often did not know where he was. The fool turned his patched and piebald head to watch Pylos climb the steep iron steps to the rookery. His bells rang with emotion.
"Under the sea, the birds have scales for feathers," he said, clang-a-langing. "I know, I know, oh-ho-ho."
Even for a fool, Patchface was a sorry thing. Perhaps once he could evoke gales of laughter with a quip, but the sea had taken that power from him, along with half his wits and all his memory. He was soft and obese, subject to twitches and trembles, incoherent as often as not. The girl was the only one who laughed at him now, the only one who cared if he lived or died.
"An ugly little girl and a sad fool, and Maester makes 3. Now there is a tale to make men weep." "Sit with me, child," Cresson beckoned her closer. "This is early to come calling, scarce past dawn. You should be snug in your bed." "I had bad dreams," Shireen told him, "about the dragons. They were coming to eat me."
The child had been plagued by nightmares as far back as Maester Cresson could recall.
"We have talked of this before," he said gently. "The dragons cannot come to life. They are carved of stone, child. In olden days, our island was the westernmost outpost of the great freehold of Valyria. It was the